mission is really all about protecting, helping families protect their pack. And their pack is defined as pets or people in their pack, and protecting them directly as well as in the homes they live in and the yards they play in.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with Brad Locke, who is president of Wonderside. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Excited to be here.
Awesome. It's always fun to sit down and have a conversation. So I want to start with you telling a little bit about what is Wonderside for those that might not be familiar with the business and brand.
Wonderside is a fabulous brand and company. We're in our 15th year now as a brand and company in the U.S., and it was really born out of a place of fierce love. And what that means is our founder, Stephanie Boone, started the company when her dog Luna became ill. Obviously, pets are an incredibly important part of our families. And so she wanted to do anything she could to help her dog. And as she was working with a vet on what the root causes could be, one of the hypotheses they identified was potential exposure to conventional pest control items, be the flea and tick products she was using or other home services products that were being applied. And so it inspired her to go on a journey to find a better way. That better way became plant-powered solutions that serve as an alternative to conventional ones. Born from fierce love, the mission is really all about helping families protect their pack. Their pack is defined as pets or people in their pack, and protecting them directly as well as in the homes they live in and the yards they play in, from everything from fleas and ticks to mosquitoes and other bugs. And so it started with humble beginnings, as most founder stories are, and just an iterative journey of continually making the products better and expanding the product assortment over time and expanding the ways and the channels in which the brand was exposed to consumers and sold over time. Really fortunate to be part of a company with an incredibly powerful mission and an incredibly powerful product alternative and a great culture as well, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about.
So building in on that mission and that culture, you joined the company about a year ago now. How do you really follow that founder's vision and take on the leadership role of this next phase of the company's journey?
Yeah, I always think about a friend of mine once told me to practice the four P's. And the four P's are preparation prevents poor performance. I thought it was a great rallying cry for whenever you're thinking about any kind of transition or anything in life for that matter. But planning and preparation is key for any role, any leadership transition. I have a couple personal tools I always go to, and which I'm sure many folks do. But a couple books, The First 100 Days is a great one. Another great one is The New Leader's 100 Day Action Plan. And those are great foundational starting points just to give you a framework for how to reflect on where you've been and where you haven't, and also to diagnose the environment you're going into, the business situations it's in, the organization that's there, the culture that exists. Those are great starting points I always go to personally for any assignment. I will literally pull each of the books out and reread them and pull from them the relevant pieces. And so that's foundational starting point. But the other big starting point specific to Wonderside is certainly just coming in with a great level of humility. I think when you start any opportunity, it's an interesting pivot, because when you're trying to have the chance to lead a business or an organization or a team, you're in the mode of selling, that you're the right person for the role based on your skills, your experiences, and the confidence that kind of comes from those. But once you get the opportunity, you really have to shift to a high humility mindset, I've found, where you go into high listener mode, low talking mode, where you spend a lot of time listening, observing, not just what people are saying, but what they're doing and how they're doing it, even body language. In those moments, it tells a lot about how the culture is playing out.
Related to that, you've always been one that's really passionate about the principles and values that are part of a company. When you looked at Wonderside, what were some of those values that really jumped out to you that attracted you to the business?
Yeah, the mission, first and foremost, is very powerful, both in how it can connect with the audience we're serving who are looking for a better way, but also the team and what it means to the team to be a part of an organization with a mission that is about empowering families to protect the ones they love. And I see it comes to life both externally and internally. So maybe I'll give an example of each. Externally, of course, it shows up first in the products we sell. So we're obviously providing plant-powered solutions that work as an alternative to conventional flea and tick products. That's part of how we show up. It also shows up in our communication. This idea of being rooted in fierce love, that's a very different posture than a lot of brands might be limited to, a very functional posture. We certainly deliver on the functional need of a category in pest control. At the end of the day, it has to work. It has to kill bugs. People are not willing to compromise that. But the fierce love comes out in terms of the tone of voice we use, the kind of imagery we use to capture the role of pets, our families, as well as the broader members of our families, the moments we share together, whether it's playing in the yard, whether it's on a hike. And that really captures that mission, drives that, helps drive that differential in terms of how we show up. Whereas again, if we didn't have that, we might be starting from a place of just pure functionality. So the mission really has helped shape how we show up externally. But then importantly, internally, it also very much shows up in how we interact with each other. This idea of protecting your pack, and pack is the word we use to capture the idea of family. It really applies to how we show up and interact with each other, treat each other, and kind of the ways of working, as well as some of the rituals and behaviors we have. And I'll give you a couple examples. We do a lot of checking in with each other, you know, so it's common across some of our standing meetings. For example, we have a weekly managers meeting where it's a high accountability moment where we're sharing by channel our key KPIs and we're reviewing performance across all the key areas. But we start out with just a moment where we each share our best for the week. And that could be a work thing, that could be a personal thing. And it doesn't take a long time, surprisingly, but going around the room and just having that moment allows us to really be in touch with kind of where everybody's at. And I do the same thing in my leadership team as well. I have a 1 to 10 check-in and the drivers behind it just to, before you dive into the substance of the day, just knowing where people are at. It's helpful and gives context and helps shape when we get into the tougher discussions, because you know how to better meet them where they're at. Another great example, probably our most popular part of our culture, is something we do, which is we call it Thankful Thursday. And what it is, every Thursday at 10 a.m., we pause production and then we pause work and we come together for about a half hour. And it's just meant to be a moment of shared gratitude, where essentially we'll each go around and we'll share one thing we're thankful for that week. And this was a tradition that was started by Stephanie as she was trying to exercise how she could demonstrate more gratitude in her daily life. And she brought it in as part of the company culture. And it's really stuck and grown to be a critical part, because as you go around the room, and again, it's a mixture of all kinds of things that are shared, whether it's a personal milestone moment, something happening with a family member, something from a work standpoint that they're really excited about that we're doing. And by the end, we call it our cups are full. You really come out with a sense of knowing where everyone's at, knowing if they need a little extra support, and just a greater appreciation for what we're a part of and what we're doing. And that's a really special thing. You could be heads down in a topic right before that meeting and be like, oh, I don't want to do this. I got stuff to do. And then 2 minutes into it, you're like, yes, that's right. This is my favorite part of the week. It's just, those are examples how we try and demonstrate that fierce love for each other, and how we try and take care of our pack as we go about competing in a really aggressive marketplace. And so I found it's been a great thing to preserve and advance in our way forward from a culture building standpoint. When you are pushing aggressively to deliver on your mission and market, you're dealing with tough competitors, trying to deliver exciting innovation for the category and for consumers and things that'll make their lives a little bit better every day. And this is a great compliment. And so I think when you can leverage a mission that already exists or evolve a mission and get to really the why behind why your brand, why your company exists in the world, there are so many ways that you can use that to drive engagement with your team and ultimately that high level of engagement contributing to better overall performance at the individual level, the team level, and ultimately in market.
Moving from that mission and everything that you've built on with that from a culture, what has been the history of how the business has gone to market? Has it been a direct-to-consumer or traditional retail? What's been that model?
Yeah, so the core model is a direct-to-consumer-driven one. And Stephanie launched her initial product into her Wonderside.com in 2009, so quite a ways back. And that allowed the opportunity to get a lot of feedback and to iterate and learn. And then she launched Amazon in 2012. So again, quite a while back on Amazon. And of course, you learn the channel, they call it the technical requirements to compete and be successful in a channel. But really, I think to get a handle around your core model, it's really about understanding how you truly create demand. And I think that's a little different than the technical requirements to do well, whether it's a .com or an Amazon or brick and mortar. And that environment is all about education. Ultimately, that's what was really working. It's a content-rich environment. It allows for a lot of education related to how the product is formulated, what it doesn't do, how to appropriately use it, and ultimately the differential it provides. And when you're selling an ingredient-centric product, whether it's Wonderside in the pest control category or human food or pet food, in any of those categories, better ingredients drive premiumization. So when you have something that's significantly more expensive than maybe a conventional option they're used to, the consumer's used to, it's important for them to get exposed to that education to understand, well, what am I getting from this? What's the advantages? How does it work differently and or better? And so education is really the thread in the core model. And from there, Wonderside expanded into the independent pet channel. So you think of your neighborhood pet stores, which again, from a channel standpoint, is technically like the opposite of direct-to-consumer. It's very sole proprietorship oriented. It's very relationship oriented in terms of how, you know, get distribution in an individual store or 10 stores. But the common thread is it's a very education-focused environment. You know, when you walk into one of those stores, they are there to ask you questions about your needs and help direct you towards solutions that could be a potential fit. And so those channels remained the focus for many years, and the company continued to get better at how to succeed in those channels and taking the learning from those to drive additional innovation, additional improvements to packaging. And then ultimately, more recently, we just launched into some of the national chains in pet specialty. So this year, the first time we're available in PetSmart and Pet Supplies Plus, which are national distribution retailers. And obviously, it's a significant increase in the opportunity to drive awareness of Wonderside among, you know, the right audience. But it's also a channel that's still very education focused. There's still a lot of emphasis placed on store associate education. And you know, I remember the first time I walked into a PetSmart looking for a dog food, and I just walked in, I saw this huge store full of food. And I was like, I was used to shopping in a Publix or a Kroger where all the food was in a 12-foot set, and it was easy to see what the options were and make sense of the differences. And here's the store where literally there's about a mile of linear shelf footage of food options. And so it's totally overwhelming. So I went and talked to a store associate and started asking questions, and then they helped me make sense of that. And so we're investing obviously in the education with the store associates as part of our launch, and with the hypothesis that that is the common thread from the core channels, which are still the majority of our business today in direct to consumer. But as we expand into brick and mortar, taking that same theme and saying, hey, you can't just have a package on shelf. How do you complement that with education around that so that a shopper has a good chance of finding the brand and learning more about why it's so special?
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
Over your career, you've had a lot of exposure with national retailers like the PetSmarts, et cetera, of the world. How have you talked with your team about the way it's different to go to market there versus direct to consumer or independent?
Yeah, that's a great question. To me, there's a couple areas. One is navigating how do you get the opportunity to be even sold? And then the other is what tools and capabilities do we need to build internally to be able to support that very different channel? Because it is, again, it couldn't be more opposite from the direct to consumer side. And on the first one, I think the learnings I've taken away is for these buyers, ultimately, it's about risk profile when you show up asking for space. And the buyer's trying to decide, do I take a risk on this unknown that's never been in my store before? And if you're a new brand that's just launching, or if you're a brand that has a little bit of a track record, the job is the same. You've got to be able to help the buyer understand and believe that the brand will be a success. So you got to figure out the advantages you can bring to help lower that perceived risk profile. So with Wonderside, you know, what it uniquely had was a long history of direct-to-consumer success. And because of that long history, there's tens of thousands of reviews that are already online. There's high ratings that are already available online by item. So one, they can quickly validate by looking at some of these channels the kind of experience consumers are having over time. And when there's enough volume, they know you have to have a consistency over those years to hold a quality rating. So that, I think, was a big part. The history of the brand storytelling in social media and in PR has a great heritage there in terms of being very mission focused and fierce love and how we show up. And that has resonated well over time, over the 15-year history, and it continues to. And again, they can see that just by going online and checking some of these channels and seeing how consumers are engaging with them. So because we have some of those things, essentially it was almost like third-party validation. They didn't have to, they weren't taking as big of a risk. And then, of course, everything that we're going to do to support the launch, you have to have all that. And so that's an expectation. But that's one key learning in terms of just putting yourself in their seat and saying, how do I help lower the perceived risk profile of me? On the second part, what are the tools and capabilities you need? For Wonderside, obviously a rich history of great content for online in terms of various tech-optimized text copy, as well as imagery, video, all the things that you create to connect effectively online. Here, it was about how do you effectively break through and communicate effectively and succinctly with store associates? How do you launch with store associates, not just shoppers? And so one of the things we did was we created what we called Wonderside University. And it was a series of 3-minute modules on a variety of topics, from our founder story to our emphasis on self-manufacturing the majority of our products and the quality that goes into them. Obviously, education on the individual products that were going to be available for distribution to their store, and also how to engage a shopper when you're talking about the flea and tick category, and even a module on just flea and tick education, so that they had that context so that they could more confidently talk about the category. And through that, as one important tool, we were able to launch that digitally, and then they can access that as part of the launch package. We also decided it's important to try the product first and get that firsthand experience as a store associate. And so we leaned in and included a bottle for every store associate. So we're going to have 56,000 store associates this year get a bottle to be able to use at home on their pet, to be able to interact with it and experience it. And so we start to think through, if we hadn't done that and we're just on shelf, the likelihood they're going to even remember the brand name, let alone what we do and how we're different. But with these tools, the approach is to say that essentially everyone will get exposure to it, get firsthand experience with it, and then we'll have greater confidence in terms of how to talk about it, which ultimately, you know, combined with all the other launch tools that are focused on the shoppers coming in, we hope will be successful.
It's a way to stand out in that crowded marketplace. Building on that, one of the other, I think, unique differentiators for Wonderside is you guys manufacture most of your own products. And in a world of co-packing, that's a rarity these days. What's been the choice to continue to manufacture your own and invest as that as a core competency for the business?
Yeah, that it's a big topic. I'll share kind of Wonderside's journey and then just share a little bit of just perspective from other places I've been to that have wrestled with that question. Ultimately, the leaning in on self-manufacturing as a big component of how you supply your product, it's ultimately about controlling your own destiny. And if you see quality and if you see innovation as long-term critical enablers to differentiation and value add you can bring to the category, generally that's what drives and justifies warranting that, along with just belief systems. Some people are just wired to think one way or another. With Wonderside, from the early days, as Stephanie was doing research on ingredients, alternatives to conventional, as well as working with formulators to put those ingredients into an effective formulation, she started from a place of producing in-house because we're doing a lot of iteration to get to the right place. And also in the early days, you're talking really small scale volume too. And in the context of this category, that was not an impossible thing to do. And so did that and really continued as the business grew and had more success, continued to just build on and add the capabilities to do larger batches, to do to a greater range of bottle sizes. And of course, more manual in the early days and bringing in more equipment in the latter days, to where in the beginning it was in a 300 square foot space. And then flash forward to now, and we just completed construction of a new 62,000 square foot state-of-the-art manufacturing, fulfillment, and office facility in Austin, Texas, which is our home. And it's really allowed that focus on quality. And of course, people think about safety requirements, and that's obviously a must-do. And certainly not producing in-house, you can still accomplish that. But I've learned there's so many nuances in what you define as quality. And when you are setting a very high standard for the ultimate experience that your end user or consumer has, details really matter. Details in product aesthetic and consistency, in the way the packaging feels, the way the label looks, the way the label's applied. And there's so many nuances and choices in that, where we just had a great example last week. It was a small thing, but the labels weren't getting, and the finished product weren't quite even enough for us. Probably a completely imperceptible thing to 9.5 out of 10 people who would be receiving the product that they've ordered. But to us, it was just not acceptable. And I know within kind of the tolerance of if somebody else is doing it for you, you can set those guardrails, but there's still a lot of interpretation at the end of the day. And are they going to care as much as we do about that small difference? Or are we going to have to catch it and send it back? We'd rather be in the position where if something's not to our standard, that we make that decision there in the moment, and then we rework it and take the labels off and put them on the right way. And so label is obviously an insignificant thing, but there's so many other things that are mission critical and nice to have. And if you want to control your quality destiny, I think really the only way. And similarly, it obviously gives you the opportunity to control your destiny from an innovation standpoint too, because you get so much opportunity to test new ideas and to learn from the expertise you built from doing, and the confidence to try new things. And there's a great intangible benefit too. It's beyond intangible, it's very tangible. When you are on the commercial side and you are not around the manufacturing, you don't have the opportunity to see how it's done, to interact with the people who are making the product on a day-to-day basis. You really miss out on so much opportunity to learn. And there's so much cross-pollination that happens at Wonderside, as well as other places I've been at where we do self-manufacturing, where you just get to a better outcome. You start to co-create versus operate completely in silos. Sometimes it's a formal way you're collaborating on a solution. Sometimes it's a chat in the break room and you're talking about one thing you're working through. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this on the customer service side and adding in this new brochure into the box when a customer places an order. And you're talking to somebody who works on the fulfillment side who fills those packs those boxes out and ships them. And they go, I love the idea, but it's going to be challenging. We already do these three things. You know, what if we consolidated these couple things we're doing into one item that goes in the box? And this one sounds like it'd be a bigger idea. Do we want to do something like that? And they start working on it. And it's not a project, right? Otherwise, you would have had to write that as a project and then get the right people together. And then you could still technically get to the same outcome. You're going to have to know you want to do that versus that organic interaction that can sometimes happen. So that's another, you know, great benefit that can come from it.
So it's been a busy year, to say the least, since you joined, opening up new manufacturing, expanding into national pet retailers. What's next, when you look at the world of Wonderside over the next year to two?
Yes, there's a lot of opportunity. We've done well as a company. It's been in around 15 years. It's been a steady track record of double-digit growth every year. And to date, we've served over 3 million packs or 3 million households. But that is a fraction of the number of households in the U.S. and the number of pet-owning households as a subset of that. And so our opportunity to continue to drive trial and household penetration is immense. And so our focus will, you know, continue to be to protect and advance our core model in the direct-to-consumer space. And we are just in our beginning days of pet specialty national chains, and that is a multi-year process in terms of partnering with those retailers and to grow their category and deliver continual innovation. And so there's a lot of runway left in terms of serving the audience, the people we're trying to serve. And then, of course, innovation, additional channels down the road, maybe we'll take those as they come. But there's a lot of wood to chop, so to speak, in terms of the spaces that we're in right now.
That's a great summary. So really appreciate you sitting down and sharing the amazing journey of the last 15 years and where you're planning on taking it now that you've joined the company.
No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share. I love everything you do in terms of seeing the potential and the value creation that comes from connecting, whether it's a startup in technology or an early stage growth company in other industries with an audience of people who lead larger businesses. I think it's a great space and a great way to share. So appreciate being a part of it.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.